Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program was brought to you by Roth Cheese, a pioneer in the U.S. specialty cheese movement. For more information, visit rothcheese.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Good evening and welcome to
Foment About It
on heritageradionetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your co-hosts through this weekly journey of all things fermented.
Whoa.
Hang on a second.
We're taking over the show today.
That's right.
What?
Good evening and welcome to Foment About It on heritageradionetwork.org.
My name is Heather McReynolds.
And I'm Rachel Jacobs.
And we're taking over the mics and pointing them at Chris and Mary today.
Whoa, those guys are the bomb.
It sounds like you guys have been a little busy. I know we haven't heard your voices on the podcast in a while. So
yeah, what's going on?
That is true. You have our sincere apologies for leaving without even saying goodbye.
Yeah, why has there been a lapse in programming, guys?
We got completely overwhelmed with things that are the new chapter of life, being Fifth Hammer Brewing Company.
Which is what we're going to talk about today.
That's right. We're turning the mics around on to Chris and Mary to talk about something you guys might have been curious about, Fifth Hammer and what's going on. So you guys know me. I'm Rachel Jacobs. I am the usual third co-host who's around, but who is Heather McReynolds?
Yeah, so I've been on your show once or twice. I think I've known you guys, 50, 60 years now, something like that.
Decades.
I moved to New York, and Chris and Mary were two of the first people I met, and I've happily been here for 6 years now, and yeah. I'm happy to call them friends, and I'm super, super proud of what they're doing, and I'm stoked to talk about it today.
Aww. Nice.
I didn't know we had this many sound effects.
No, lots happened since we've been gone.
Oh, but we got it. We do have a couple.
We've only been gone 6 months, really. But
you have can I do announcements first?
All right, go.
We'll do some standard programming.
Okay.
Now that we're back,
you insist.
So I actually only have one announcement.
I have a question.
So my announcement is, if you are in the New York City area and you want to drink some awesome, kick-ass New York City brewed beers, then you should come to Blocktoberfest on October 6th at the Well in Brooklyn.
Word.
It's from 1 to 5 p.m. and you can check it all out and buy tickets on nycbrewed.com.
I think that is really just pre-gaming and training for the New York City Home Brewers Guild's 30th anniversary on October 14th. And we're going to celebrate all things homebrew and pro brew. We're celebrating the pros and joes affiliated with the New York City Home Brewers Guild, which has a very special place in Mary and my heart because that's where we met. Mm-hmm. And we've learned a lot about brewing through our constituents there and seen the homebrew scene grow quite a bit in New York City. And this is our 30th anniversary. 5 years ago, we did our 25th anniversary for the New York City Homebrewers Guild, and we basically invited all the homebrew clubs from
Amazing.
Around New York City. And it was awesome to have so many homebrew clubs under one roof, and that kind of was the birth of Brewnity, which is the kind of umbrella kind of organization. We're not really that organized. We just sometimes throw a festival and call it Brewnity. Hey, cheers to Brewnity. Anyway, we're going to try and rah-rah again on that day. But I would be remiss to not also mention the other homebrew event that's happening 3 weeks prior. All of these events are happening at the same place, at the Well.
Which is one of the coolest
beer festival venues, if not the coolest beer festival
no
venue.
Doubt,
and
it's
no
also
doubt.
Just good for regular regular beer drinking. True, it's solid true. For that, too.
Can't be it a place is. With leather couches. It's pretty cool.
It has a lot of giant space outdoors. It's
what's
really
happening at the Well?
At the Well, so...
Bruminaries.
Bruminaries are throwing a local event. I forget what it's called officially. I think it's called Brewing Local or Local. If you go to bruminaries.com, you can find that. If you go to New York City Homebrewersguild.com, you can find, or nychomebrew.com, you can find the information for the 30th anniversary party. But the Bruminaries basically are, all their homebrewers are brewing with a large, significant portion of New York City or New York State ingredients and celebrating New York State with this festival.
Very cool.
And when is this festival?
Yes.
That's September 29th
it's before.
Because
okay,
it's the
right.
same day as Fifth Hammer's
what?
1 year anniversary.
Oh my God. So, oh my so. God. Speaking of Fifth Hammer,
yeah,
you're 1 year old.
It's been a year.
It's been a year.
Yes, it has. It's not quite yet. Almost. Not quite yet. But we're getting
you guys are so cute.
Hey, we got a face for radio.
Let's back it up a little bit. So let's back it up a little bit. You're 1 year old, mm-hmm. even before then.
I want a pony.
Before then.
I'm drinking a pony.
Ah. Yeah,
I'm drinking a half-acre pony. I got a pony.
It's delicious.
Yes.
So people who regularly tune into the show know a little bit about Fifth Hammer, how you guys started last year, and a little bit about your woes of going through the thing. But last when we left off, Mary, I believe you announced that you had left your job to start full-time at Fifth Hammer. And Fifth Hammer has all sorts of fun weekly events going on. So
thanks to her new bandwidth to organize.
Yeah, so what's the status of Fifth Hammer now? What's going on?
Oh, gosh, where do we start? So go ahead.
Okay. So, it's a slow start. We started very cautiously. We don't want to be a regional brewery. Our focus is to be a local hub for community and celebrating the art of Zimmergy. We're not trying to take over the world. We just want to have fun and have the ability to express ourselves through...
And make delicious beer.
Through libations, right. And I know I'm looking at you, Heather, because Steve Parks is our old teacher. You went to the American Brewers Guild, and he hates when people call beverages libations. So this one's for you, Steve. Fucking hipsters over here.
It almost sounds like you're about to answer my first question.
Let's set it up.
We don't want to get too big too fast. Want to do everything right and slow and take the natural growth that is coming to us. And so at this current time, we have 4 fermenters, 2 30 barrel fermenters, 2 15 barrel fermenters, 1 30 barrel bright tank, and 1 5 barrel bright tank. And we did just place an order for 2 more 30 barrel fermenters.
But by the way, 1 barrel is roughly 2 kegs of beer. So
correct.
We're talking about a lot of liquid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I got
so we're a 15
do.
Barrel brewing system. Mm-hmm. That's where we started. That's where we're still at. And we have 5,000 square feet total in Long Island City, which is a neighborhood in New York. It's one stop from Manhattan on the EM or 7 trains are our nearest trains. So it's really close to Manhattan. We have a great view of the Manhattan skyline. And we have a 2,000 square foot tasting room that's open 7 days a week.
And I want to shout this out because when we start doing this show,
who's running this show?
Sorry. We're talking about fermentation space and stuff. And like,
go ahead.
So at 508 Gastrobrewery, when we started this show in 2012, I had just been hired at 508 Gastrobrewery, and I was brewing into these like little 1.5 barrel fermenters. And today I spent my day kind of cleaning them, assessing them. And for our 1 year anniversary, we're going to ferment into them. So I've got some, they're not jacketed. So they're, we're going to use these Norwegian yeast strains, the Hothead, the Voss, and the Hornlander.
It's Hornlick.
Exactly, that one.
We'll look at how to spell that and put it
Omega.
On.
Yeah. Omega yeast has these Norwegian strains that can ferment at very high temperatures. I've never used them. I have tasted stuff that goes with them. They can end up they're non-phenolic, brewing so high and so fast. And I'm excited to do these. And so through the month of October, we're going to have some celebratory kind of throwback system beers, but new world kind of fun experimentation
for anybody who
stuff.
Might not think about it, like it's very rare that you would brew at one place and then acquire your old equipment back at another place. Like usually when you leave
it
a place, you
to
it's they belong to you. They are yours. They found their home.
I struggled to get rid of them. I really wanted to get rid of them, but nobody would take them because they're these plastic fermenters and like nobody wants plastic and they're non-jacketed and like everybody's nervous about even myself going straight into. You can hear the early episodes. I was scared of the plastic.
Yeah.
But some really great things happened with it. So
great things will continue to happen.
Yes, right. Especially with those magic omega yeasts.
Yes, yep.
Very cool.
So that's where you guys are now. But let's go back.
Go back.
A year, exactly. In the Wayback Machine, let's go back a year.
Even more.
Oh, yes.
Even more.
Let's go back far into
Wayne's World shout out. So, and this might be a little bit of a hard question, but you kind of got to a couple points of it. But I think there's something like 6,000, there's over 6,000 breweries in the U.S. right now. Mm-hmm. A bajillion.
And there's many in New York City alone. There's a, 30?
Why 40. 40? Why open a brewery?
Sorry.
Why open a brewery? What do you?
This was not my dream originally.
What do you have to say about beer that is not being said, or before you opened the brewery, wasn't being said by anybody else?
Right. So, you know, for a lot of people, that's an impetus, right? You know, I want to make stuff that nobody's made before and all that stuff. And Mary said this wasn't her dream necessarily to be a brewer, and nor was it mine. I'm an accidental brewer. I'm a saxophone player, and you know we talk about that on the show, whatever. And when I first started homebrewing, the parallel of making music and getting something from concept to melody and getting something from concept to glass, that was really heavy to me. And that same sort of creationism and creativity execution was really hip. But I still didn't necessarily think I wanted to be a pro brewer, especially when I found out how much work it was. I mean, this is glorified janitorial work. Like, I didn't necessarily want to do that. And I wanted to spend the job was just to make money so that I could play the gigs that I wanted to play, because it's all about expression. It's all about, you know, intent there. And then in 2012, just as we started this show, you know, somebody out of the blue was like, hey, do you want to brew here at Five Oak Gastro Brewery? And I wasn't making a whole lot of money else. And I was like, okay, I'd like to do that, or I'll throw my hat in the ring for that. And it ended up being serendipitous, leading to then me being able to have complete freedom. Like, I wasn't just working at a brewery. Like, I was able to, like, be behind the creation of the beers itself. And I found even more of a parallel of being a pro brewer with the music and making money with it, and really enjoying and getting into the liquid. That's when I found, at 508 Gastro Brewery, that's where I discovered it as a vocation, where I'm no longer just a saxophone player. I am a saxophonist and a brewer, and I need to be doing both in order for me to feel complete.
Got to add the slash in there.
Yeah, saxa-brewer. My card says saxa-brewer.
Or just put them all together.
Yeah.
So that's also, that's a great thought too. So what was it like at 508 when the very first beer that you made was on tap and being sold to somebody? Describe that feeling. What does that feel like?
That feels awesome. It's amazing. Well, if you're real, I don't know. It's a same thing with when you make an album. Like, I can never listen to my own music that much. Like, I'm constantly like thinking about it. I can't get away from it because I was in there for the process, and blah, 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 it's hard to really taste it objectively or hear it objectively. And the same thing's happening to me even at Fifth Hammer, where, like, you know, the first few days or the first week or 3 weeks that the beer is on, like, I'm constantly thinking about it. I can't, like, just chill and listen and just listen to the beer.
Gotcha.
But it was amazing there for sure. But at the same time, I was thrown into the mix. It was a place that was already open. It wasn't like I had to, you know, we made the beers and then opened. Mm-hmm. That we were dealing with the beers that they had left. I was a nervous Nilly dealing with, you know, when are we going to run out of beer? Because a lot of stuff had been thrown away from Sandy, the storm. And
that was a rough time.
Can't stop thinking, like, people are drinking you out of beer, especially if you're not making money very fast. Like, you can't stop to think about or to enjoy the moment sometimes. You just
a little sad. But yeah, 508 was a good place. R.I.P.
But it was being able to brew 200 beers on that system and being able to go so many different directions that made me really decide. But going back to your official question, which made me decide that I really needed to do this. When that chapter ended, I had to continue this somehow, some way. And
which brings us to our friend Dave Sharfstein.
Yeah, I love that guy.
The guy who could not make it here today. How did that come about? How did you meet him? What's the deal there?
For listeners who are confused, it's the co-founder of Fifth Hammer.
Yes.
Co-founder, co-owner.
Why do you want to work with Dave Sharfstein? How'd that happen?
So how did it happen? How did I meet Dave Sharfstein? Dave Sharfstein is a recovering lawyer.
Fully recovered.
Well, that may be true a little bit. In late 2014, he decided that he was just miserable being a lawyer, and he told his wife this, and she was like, well, why don't you just quit? And so before she was able to change her mind, he quit. and he was really in love with craft beer, and he saw the trends in the city that he had some money saved up and wanted to buy a beer bar and buy a bar and turn it over into craft beer bar. Go that way.
Pretty smart at business too.
Yeah.
He's not a one trick pony kind of guy.
Absolutely. Yes. No, he's a very complicated gentleman that we appreciate fully. So he was looking basically for a turnkey lease in New York City to run a bar or to like open a bar and have the right person manage it. Cause he knew he's very smart in that he knows what, as much as he knows that he does know, he knows that he doesn't know what he doesn't know, and knew that he would need to find somebody to run this bar. Yes. That was his plan. It wasn't like he's like, oh, I know all things about beer, and I can run a beer bar. You're like going to find the right person to do that.
Yes.
He was being taken around New York City with a broker looking at spots, and his broker brought him to 508 Gastro Brewery. Our lease was up for that same thing. We were going to not renew that lease based on the increased rent. I had already packed up the brew house, sold what I could, except for those plastic fermenters, had to give those away to somebody. He loved the space. He's like, man, this place is amazing. And what? They make their own beer. That's crazy. I had already left town. I'd gone to China to visit my family. This place is amazing. And then he found out while he was drinking his beer, he loved the beer. The bartender slipped that we'd already sold the lease. And he stayed anyway. He kind of was mad at his broker a little bit for bringing him to a place that was not exactly on the market.
Yeah.
And then he had more beer, and he was lamenting this fact 2 days later to a friend of his, and his friend was like, where's that place? Down in Soho. I know that place. I was just there 2 weeks ago. I took a tour, and the brewer was really nice, and he gave me his card. I have his card in my pocket. And he was like, you have to give me that card. And it turned out he did have my card in his pocket. And Dave took my card from his friend. We had never met. And I'm in Hong Kong talking to my mother, like literally talking to my mother with my computer open, being like, I'm not sure what the next chapter is. You know, this is just like a nice rest. I got to figure out what it is. I've had a couple of job offers in New York City to work under some other people. And this email comes in. Hi, you don't know me. My name is Dave. I don't know what you're doing in the future, but I'd love to meet and talk about, you know, helping you go, because I love the beer, love the atmosphere, and I don't know why there aren't more breweries in New York City. And I very skeptically, I was like, hey, hold on, buddy, let's just have a beer. Like one of those cold calls. I'm like, let's just have a beer and talk it out. Like,
you gotta go on a date first.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we went on a date, and Mary chaperoned us.
Because he sent me that email. I was like, dude, I'm going with you because who is this?
You gotta
guy?
Meet this guy. You're in a public place.
That's you're a New Yorker when you're skeptical of anybody. I think we are by nature.
Anyway, the cat is really, really nice, really smart, really we hit it off really, really great. Mary fully, mostly Mary approved. So
I do remember though. I tell you, I do remember that, after your, I'm using air quotes, date with Dave, Mary mentioned to me, she's like, Heather, we met up with this dude and it was great. And like, it's almost like you were talking about like, he could be the one.
Yeah, it is.
Like, that's what Mary told me.
So we have this business marriage. And we're totally in love, and you know, in business love, and it's good. Like, really, there's a really strong support. Like, he excels in areas that I do not, and vice versa. And I think there's a really great balance, you know. And
definitely.
And especially with Mary as a moderator now, so
incredible. Definitely.
Yeah, and with that, we're going to take a short break. And we'll be right back on For Men About It here on Heritage Radio Network.
For Men About It.
Today's program was brought to you by Roth Cheese, a pioneer in the U.S. specialty cheese movement. Roth is in its 25th year of making specialty cheese in the rolling hills of southern Wisconsin. With strong Swiss heritage, Roth is best known for its award-winning Alpine-style cheeses under the name Grand Cru. Fresh Wisconsin milk, combined with expertise in affinage, is how Roth creates high-quality, great-tasting cheese year after year. In 2016, hard work paid off when out of over 2,000 contenders, Roth Grand Cru Sur Choix was named world champion at the World Cheese Championship. For more information, visit rothcheese.com.
Hi.
Hey, we're back.
We've got Mary and Chris, you've got Heather and Rachel who are womaning the microphones.
That's right.
Turning them on Mary and Chris.
Flippity doodah.
Because
for 500, Alex.
We are learning all about the genesis of Fifth Hammer and where it came from and the little seed that turned into a beautiful flower. And wow, I'm getting
the
really
nail that turned
dorky.
Into a hammer.
Ah, better one. So cool. We just talked about meeting Dave, and that was a really great thing for you guys. Obviously, he's a great person to work with. But let's talk more about this process, because like,
oh yeah. So listeners, yeah. Regular listeners of the show may have heard as the brewery was being built in real time, some of the woes and pratfalls and all the fun stuff of dealing with the New York City Department of Buildings. But overall, what were some of the toughest challenges that you had in opening the brewery and building the brewery?
I'm relatively calm and collected going through challenging times, or like I expected everything to take a long time. A lot of my friends have opened breweries in this challenging city, and so I think the toughest time was calming Dave's nerves.
It's going like, to cost how much?
That is not true.
I had to be a therapist.
You had some heart. You were heartbroken too.
Oh, yeah. No, losing a couple leases that I really loved was definitely hard. But, you know, that aside, like when we got the lease that we did, like I'm so glad everything failed before that, because the places wouldn't have been as successful. Like, you know, they always talk location, location, location for New York City. And I think that a lot of our success in the last year has been the location and also the way the place is suitable for the kind of production brewery and taproom community hub that we want to be. Like, mm-hmm. It was just perfect. It was like this, you know, everything's not this kind of story, you know, and I don't take that for granted. I really appreciate it. The Department of Buildings and the slowness of that, where we allocated money, you know, there are tough choices to do when you have a certain budget, like where to spend it, where to not. And you can't ever predict how fast people are going to get the jobs done, and you make the best choices you can. And they're all frustrating, especially when you think you made the best choice and then things take longer than they are. Whereas if you had just thrown more money at it in the beginning, like either by a better contractor, better architect, better whatever, maybe you would have, but this is all hypothetical.
Yeah,
like who knows?
No sure things.
But you know, if we look back at it and try and, you know, we think maybe, okay, well, who knows? I don't know.
So we'll do.
I'm trying not to think about that anymore.
The capsule. So it took a year and a half to find the lease.
So yes. let's clarify that a little. So year and a half. What kind of time frame is that? Is that from like
that was from January
all right,
to May?
We're gonna start a brewery.
Yeah.
Just to finding a lease in New York
just
City.
Just to find yep. a building.
You guys signed a lease in May, correct? And then you took possession at the end of August?
In May 2016, we signed a lease. We started looking in January of 2015, yep. or late January 2015.
You guys, that sounds like a pain in the ass.
It was, totally.
It was horrible. Even, I only looked at a couple of these spaces, but
job,
good God, the... Yeah.
I remember you guys had a place in Bushwick that you were like looking at, and then that fell through. I thought you had it signed. Like, what happened there?
They had like 7 leases in hand that all fell through.
Well, I think we definitely slowed when you're first doing this. You know, you get that first lease bid, or like, you know, put a bid on that first lease, and you stop looking because you think, oh, there's no way we're not going to be accepted for this, or like, you know, and you put all your eggs in that one basket, and then you learn or you put all your eggs in one broker. And then, you know, but things aren't real until it's signed, because mm-hmm. certain landlords are
yes.
playing you against other people and it's
or
they're just playing
they
the
have
game.
A ton of violations against them, and
right.
there's no way yeah. you'll be able to do anything with that building until
right.
that landlord pays off those violations,
right.
which could be God knows when.
Right, that's true.
Or they want a personal guarantee. They want like your firstborn child and their and your firstborn grandchild. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And that's yeah.
New York City
that's
real estate's
real.
Crazy.
I mean, I just went through that process for myself personally to find an apartment, and it was a nightmare. Yes. Oh my God,
They wanted a signed thing from our, like, from my employer, and they implied that they were going to call them to make sure that I really worked there.
Listen, my God. So anyone out there who doesn't live in New York City yet, just don't move here. Don't, please
or
don't.
Or have
just
all of your paperwork ready. Make sure that you have your social security card taken out of the safe deposit box and find your birth
Your blood type.
Just don't come. We don't want to.
No, don't come. Please don't. Anyway.
Come, visit our tap room.
Except you
took possession in August.
So we signed the lease in May and we took possession in August. Thankfully, our landlord was super cool and he at least let us still get access to the place in between May and August.
Very cool.
And in order to take measurements and do everything and get our architect on the ball get stuff. However, we still didn't submit things to the Department of Buildings to get the plans approved for the build out that we wanted to do until October or November, which was after the 3 months of concession that we had were over. So then we're waiting.
Meaning concession, you don't have to pay rent.
Right. Usually with a lease, they'll give you a certain amount of free rent. There's no standard. There's just hopes and wants and a certain average of usually. But
I'm assuming all this stuff is negotiable.
Obviously, the landlord wants best for them, and we want what's best for us. And everybody needs to save money or make money, and it's tough to negotiate all that stuff.
And then we finally open September 29th of 2017.
So that's
the time frame.
So
right, August to September, so a year and 2 months.
Oh my God.
Hold on. Let's go back from
May.
You and Dave have this wonderful first date.
Year and 3 months, really.
Decide to do this crazy thing, and that was January of
2015.
2015, and then you open in
September 29th of 2017.
Two and a half years later.
Woo! That's some date.
It's a doozy. That's a doozy.
Yeah,
that sounds about right, though.
The last year. Crazy. This last year probably, well, I don't know. It's crazier than the lead-up, almost.
Yeah, you're looking at me for emotional response, but all I can think about is what I have to put in the fermenter next. This is like that same thing where I'm in it, and we just keep moving, and the duty is to get there. But I love it. Also, that's what it's for. That's great. We, the people are there supporting it, and I'm so thankful that we're able to continue it and keep doing that and explore. Now we're in a place where we can really start exploring other more fun. Not more fun. It's all been fun, but we can get more along the lines of what we are, Mary, as the kind of crazy foment about it people.
Coming soon.
Yeah. And so these Quebec yeasts and the smaller stuff. I'm really excited to get these little things down, and I'm excited to get more fermentation capacity. And we just bought some more wood.
For
the next. What?
This is news to me too.
Sorry, no, I told you, but it's maybe I didn't tell you, but. not very much, but we did a collaboration with the Bruminaries, part of this collaboration we want to hit with pineapple and Brettanomyces classeni, pineapple on pineapple, and we're going to put it in some wood to age for a while and see when that's ready and stuff. And so we just bought those. I'm going to pick them up tomorrow. Actually, we're going to take them from KCBC, Kings County Brewers Collective, which is celebrating their 2-year anniversary.
That's right.
Woo! Woo. Shout out to American Brewers Guild.
ABG.
I might still be stuck in KCBC a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. And you might remember them from episode...
So, yeah. You guys are open now. It was a very long, arduous process. Lots of money was involved, but now you're open and it's fantastic and it's great. So, yeah, now we're in the present day, now that we're open, what is one of the challenges that you had no idea you ever thought was going to be a challenge and it is?
Running a tasting room.
In what way?
Wow, that's so many. Okay, so
I don't think that I
that's because Chris doesn't really do that much.
That's also true.
Yeah,
I stay in the back.
And honestly, I never expected to quit my day job. I had a corporate day job of 18 and a half years that I left on June 18th.
Buddy, you didn't like your job.
No,
that much.
That's true. But I never wanted to quit it to work full time at the brewery. Like, that was never part of the plan.
To be fair, I will say that it was really cool that you were able to support your husband during this whole time, because right. obviously
I'm about to say the same thing. The only way this brewery exists is because Mary had that job.
Yeah,
for 18 and a half years.
So
it's the only way.
Yeah,
Bithammer opened.
Yeah, it's true. So right. yes,
so listeners, if you want to start a brewery,
as a
yes.
Mary. Yeah,
you find a sugar mama,
exactly,
or now retired sugar mama. Yes. But yeah, I will say, as a friend, it was always a little hard for me because, you know, I hear you like not being happy with your job and not being fulfilled, and you're venting to me, and you know, that's cool. But on the flip side of it, it's like, but there's so many great things are coming out of this. And so it was really, really cool for me to see like all of those positive things going in a positive direction. And then the culmination of, and now Mary doesn't have to work there anymore. Yes.
And now she can dye her hair blue.
That's right. Yes. Her hair is blue.
No, I think tasting room, because when no, we're gonna go back to
the challenges.
Let's go.
Honestly,
tasting
though,
room, let's go.
Because you know, I think Chris and I knew, I mean, obviously Chris more so than I did, because he's worked in multiple breweries over the years. Mm-hmm. So I mean, running a brewery is one thing entirely. There are lots of challenges there as far as production times and cleanliness and, you know, making sure your beers are good and you don't have infections and your drains are clean and you're getting the right efficiency and, you know, things are delivered on time. There's a gazillion challenges running.
Huge.
Yeah, running a brewery. But we're basically running a brewery and a bar.
Uh-huh.
And running a bar is a completely different animal.
Yeah.
So we are open 7 days a week and we are slammed on the weekends. We are no longer a brewery on the weekends. Half the people that walk in on a Saturday have no idea that we're a brewery. I mean, when they walk in the door, but I can't tell you how many times that people have drank our beers on a Saturday for an hour or more, and our brewing system and tanks are clearly visible from the tasting room.
True.
And, you know, come up and been like, hey, so what happens over there? Like, what?
Where do we keep the horses?
Yeah.
What sorcery is this?
Yes, that's where that's where the bad patrons go in the tanks.
They go in the fridge.
So, so it's interesting because I don't think we knew we were going to have a tasting room. We had no idea how successful the tasting room was going to be.
Woohoo!
And that's exactly the reason why I'm able to quit my job 2.5 months ago or whatever it's been.
Thanks, drinkers.
And I think, you know, I honestly, the tasting room has been awesome because it is a place, like, we have made so many new friends through there, met so many new people, and people come to our tasting room to celebrate. They come to get away from the world, right? They come to just hang out and get a break from their daily life. They come to celebrate their co-workers going away party or their birthday party or their dog's birthday party or
that's a thing
whatever
a thing.
I've been to a kid's birthday party there, I think.
Yeah, I mean, they come to celebrate, and that's an amazing thing. It is an amazing thing.
You're part of that now. Yeah. that's cool.
It's super exciting because it's kind of a happy place in people's lives,
and
I think that to me is one of the biggest, like, surprise, I don't know, things I didn't think about going into this.
I just want to say this because it's one of my favorite quotes. It's my former friend of mine was working at a bar around here, and they had a staff meeting, and they were talking about how, you know, what that bar was like, or like what it was. People go there to dream. They're expecting to have a good time. They're going there already positive. They're already excited to be there. And your job as a staff member is to, you know, don't wake them up from the dream.
Yeah.
So don't do anything jarring. Make sure that there's no element of your service that is like less than that. And I think that we try and have our staff up to that standard where, like, just you don't want to jolt them out of the dream. You want them to stay in that dream state. And the beer has to be on par to meet that expectation and be good and not have some flavor that's off and out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our people have to be nice enough to
uh-huh.
and aware. And also, I like the acronym ASK, right? Awareness, speed, and kindness. You know, for our bartenders, you know, just mm-hmm. like always there for it.
They're a great group of people.
Yep.
behind the bar.
And I think, you know, the tasting room, we've learned a lot in the last year. I think we're much better at it now. Our tasting room is a much better place, or it's than it was. I mean, it's the same place, but we have more benefits, I guess.
It was always a really great place to go. Not don't make it sound like it was.
No.
It was never bad.
I'll say
it's
that.
It's running a little more smooth now.
Behind the scenes is a lot better.
Yes.
And we have pop-up food vendors every weekend.
Yep.
We're learning, you know, we've learned kind of what we can do to make the customers have a better experience, right?
Yeah, definitely. Great answer. I don't think nowadays too. I mean, the taproom model is such a great source of revenue for a lot of these people opening breweries. And I think a lot of people opening breweries don't consider that it's running a bar. You're really running a bar.
And I think that's really important for people to think about that right now as the world shrinks and as we grow breweries in America. Like, don't underestimate the importance of your direct to consumer experience, and
it's huge.
Yeah.
Now on to like a lighter question, but you know, I'm a big music person. Obviously, Kuzme is like the biggest music person of all. Our Saxa Brewer. I'm kind of directing this to both you guys though. What are your favorite tunes to brew to?
Or tune jams.
What fermenter am I going into?
You're going into...
Preface that with, okay, I've got four fermenters.
No, I know. You're going into the 15-barrel fermenter. So it's a...
Which 15-barrel fermenter?
It's either number three or four.
What? No, they're not three or four. They're Sonny or Paul.
Right.
Oh, my God.
Your favorite one. Pick your favorite fermenter.
It'd be Sonny, for sure. Without a doubt. Sonny Rollins.
What are you loving to brew to right now?
What's
what
crazy?
Kind of tunes?
Like when Dave would leave for the day or something like that, or like at night or something in our early stages, I'd throw on some Sonny Rollins and then like the place would be fucking clean in like an hour and a half. Like everything would be organized. I'd be listening to Sonny Rollins, The Bridge, and things would be popping and awesome. Or live at the Village Vanguard, Sonny Rollins cranking.
Yeah.
But if you really want to get rolling, you know, to go to fermenter number four. I'll give you the numbers, Mary. Paul Gonzalez, live at Newport 56. Duke Ellington, that amazing. It brought swing music back, brought Duke Ellington back, which was during the heyday of bebop. That is such a significant album and importance in the history of music, not just jazz music, music. Incredible.
Some jammers
Paul Gonzalez
to brew
plays
too.
Like nice. Plays like the 27th chorus solo, and there was apparently this lady in a white dress that just danced crazy on the style. And it's the only time also that Duke Ellington ever lost his shit in the studio, because everybody wanted a live recording of this, and there was a really shitty recording of it made, but they wanted to have it worthy of the album, so they made Duke Ellington's band transcribe all the solos and stuff and basically re-record it over it and stuff, and they had to play it along to the live track that they had.
Dang.
To get it, and that, which is a really hard thing to do.
Yeah.
But anyway, our first fermenter is named after Charlie Parker, so it's Bird, and so I listen a lot of Charlie Parker when I roll into that. So the other day we did a collaboration with Brooklyn Brewery, and we went into that into Bird, and we played, you know, we started off the day as we were mashing into Charlie Parker.
Nice.
And our second one is John Coltrane, or Train. Mm-hmm. And I listen to a lot of Train. Especially, it's significant this year because there was a re-release of a lost album. And apparently, his son, Ravi Coltrane, has a lot of these like lost Coltrane records. And was just gonna kind of let him out as we go. But they're awesome. Like the one that was released this year is just so amazing. It used to be that we would send all of our beer into our Bright Tank. And because one of the biggest influences on me has been Dexter Gordon throughout my life, you know, and our Bright Tank is long, tall. that was his nickname, Long Tall Dexter.
Okay.
Our Bright Tank is Dexter Gordon. But now we're turning everything to Uni, so everything doesn't go through Dexter anymore.
Wow.
And a unit tank basically means that we can ferment in it, but it also holds enough pressure that we are able to...
package,
cold crash it, and force carbonate it and package,
which is great because you don't have as much loss, so you know that's more beer that can go into your
mouth. We don't have a Bright Tank bottleneck. If you only have one Bright Tank and you need to keg like three beers in a day, you can't do it.
You gotta flip
so
those.
I'm considering, so when we would make our lagers, they would spend a lot of time in the fermenter itself and taking that up for like solid 5 weeks. So now I'm going to send them over to that Bright Tank since everything's set up as a uni.
Yeah.
To Dexter. Yeah. So all our lagers, we'll see Dexter.
There
we'll
you
go through Dexter. Be melodious. So, like, Dexter.
That was a more fantastic answer than I ever could have imagined, Kuzme. That was great.
I knew
we
would have an answer for that, of course.
But I also want to direct this question to Mary, too, because Mary has also, you know, obviously we all know Mary's an awesomely active homebrewer, and she's been doing her thing for years and years and a bajillion years. But the cool thing for you now, Mary, is that you also have this 15-barrel mm-hmm. system to play with, and you've been learning, so... What have you loved to jam out to when you've been brewing on the 15-barrel system?
So I'll be honest, we have a co-brewer,
uh-huh.
Brett Taylor, who
yes.
is amazing.
Oh, he's amazing.
So I haven't been brewing as much, and I think, I don't know, we're going to, I'm not.
Soon to change.
Yeah. Soon to change. So I haven't been jamming out. I've mostly been
all right,
welcoming other people.
But you've been doing stuff at the brewery, and when you yes. have, what are the playlists that you've put on?
Because
you were painting, like you redid our sign and our track wall.
Alice Merton Radio that's right. on Spotify. So that's right.
There you go. Okay, there you go.
Well, that's pretty awesome.
I like 80s, too, sometimes. 80s in our tasting room just works sometimes.
80s, sure. like 80s like some like hair metal kind of
or
rock?
Like the Human no. League?
Yeah, like...
Can be down with some Human League, Prog too. Rock?
80s pop, man.
Maybe oh some... Yeah, Talking Heads or something.
Oh, yeah. Always David Byrne. David Byrne goes with beer so well.
Yeah. So, Mary, leads me to my next question. We already touched on it. You've been transitioning from I'm going to use some air quotes, normal person.
Traditional.
Traditionally working person.
Yeah.
To someone who doesn't have that structure, because you've been working at the brewery now. So how has that been for you? I mean, sorry to back it up again. You had your previous job for 18 years.
That is a long time.
So
that's like a person. Time. That's an adult person.
Yeah, that's an adult person.
That's adulthood, yes.
How has that transition been? You've been at the brewery now for 2 months, not working?
Just over two, yeah.
Yeah, so like, how's that transition been?
Great. I mean, good. I love that I don't work that job anymore. Ooh. I'll admit it. And I do love Fifth Hammer. Yeah. I think the biggest challenges are just I felt really mentally disorganized for a while, like a month and a half, because mm-hmm. I don't have a set job at Fifth Hammer. Like, none of us do. We all, like, do what needs to be done, right?
Yeah.
And we're still kind of figuring out what needs to be done exactly. Like, mm-hmm. Instagram, for instance, or... So I do social media.
Which Mary's crushing. You should follow at Fifth Hammer right now. It's great. Lots of dog pictures.
I want to say this because I think it's really great.
There's so many
good
points.
I'm a little bit focused. My card says Saxa Brewer. Hers says multitasker.
Yes. Yeah.
Literally says multitasker.
So there's a lot of stuff I was doing from the beginning. Like, I've been doing menus almost from the beginning, which include like beer descriptions and just getting everything on the menu. The events. I was doing event planning. I'm doing more event planning now. I'm booking pop-up vendors every weekend, which is great because we don't have food. So this allows us to have food in the brewery on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. Social media, I'm expanding. I've been tweeting a little bit, mm-hmm. doing more Facebook stuff. And then I've been doing some recipe kind mm-hmm. of stuff. Like, we have a pineapple sour right now that I added smoked salt to. So we don't really get the smoke, but it just was enough smoke to balance it out. And enough salt to balance it out.
It's a very lovely beer. I tasted it the other week. It was great.
So stuff like that. Some HR stuff.
I have some questions for you. That,
hey, whoa.
Come on.
All right, you get one.
I also replaced the toilet on 4th of July. And my favorite thing
get you a woman who can do it all.
Right?
And my favorite thing is biofoaming the drains. So the drains, like...
That is her favorite. That's crazy.
It is.
Came back
I love
to the brewery
it.
On Tuesday just to biofoam the drains before going to bed.
At like 10:30.
It's great. Yeah.
Anyway, basically biofoaming the drains. You know, lots of stuff goes down your brewery drains, including, you know, beer on the tasting room side, as well as all kinds of sugar and organic material. So I basically add this microbial foaming solution that eats all the organic matter.
So yeah, get them underneath the fermenter feet.
Anyway, these are things that you have to do when you own a brewery, and it's my favorite thing right now. It's true. Yeah. Outside of taking photos of dogs at sunset.
Yeah, those are great too.
There are some really good boys. Yes.
Kuzme, I believe you had a question for Mary.
Mm-hmm.
I'll allow it.
It's kind of a question for us, but as for men about it, I feel like, you know, let's get to the technical topic of like from home brewing to this, the concerns when we're dealing with fun tank stuff mm-hmm. and stability. And well, so we have a fun tank, which is our 5-barrel tank. And, you know, we're starting to explore more with fruit. When we were doing it at home, we would throw.
Let's back up a second. So fun tank basically means you have a small stainless steel vessel where if you have a batch of beer, let's say you have a stout and, you know, you want to put some special ingredient in part of it, but not all of it, you can divert a little bit of liquid into that fun tank and then add your fun ingredient, whatever. Maybe it's coconut, maybe it's pineapple, maybe it's whatever. But as a person with a tap room, that means that you can get two different beers from one beer. So that's really convenient for you guys. So with your fun tank, let's go. What's happening?
There's been a longstanding practice of Mary and mine since 508. Then we would just do it right straight into the keg and packaging because we didn't have a bright tank at 508. But here we have the fun tank and stuff. And I don't know. Are there things of note to speak to in this with regard to stability?
I agree, but I think we have to save this for another episode. We're going to talk about current. So an episode
that. Confused. I thought you were asking a question here.
I was, but she doesn't want to answer it.
Listen, this is too long of an answer. So I'm going to say this. So Chris and I, so I've been homebrewing. Okay, no, I've been drinking craft beer since college, which was like 20-some years ago. And Chris and I kind of grew up, cut our craft beer teeth on some really traditional styles. Like, we were there when American IPAs and American Imperial IPAs came about, right?
Sure.
And we've kind of seen this evolution of craft beer in America where there was kind of a switch. I think a lot of craft brewers in America, although we had steam beer, for instance, or California Common or Imperial IPAs, those were kind of unique American styles.
Mm-hmm.
But for a long time, Americans were basically brewing styles that had developed in other countries or other areas of the world, right? And then, you know, doing their riffs on them. But in the last few years, I'd say the last 5 years, even the last 2 or 3 years, there's kind of a, that's gone even more so. Like, American brewers are creating even more styles and pushing the boundaries on what they can brew. And craft beer consumers are demanding things that are interesting and somewhat difficult to, can be difficult to brew, but also present challenges that kind of old school styles didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just going to say, let's talk about the fruited sour ale.
Mm-hmm.
There's a recent article on Good Beer Hunting by Brian Roth that I think everybody out there should read.
Love that, go read
that, and we're going to talk about it at a future episode because it is a fucking landmine.
How about next week?
My question was towards stability. Stability. And, well, and modern editions.
Right.
And basically, it's opening up a giant can of worms, but okay. I just want people to know that we are thinking about it, and we deliberately place our beer in certain places depending on the stability of the beer. We can certain things, we would not can other things. And we will keep things just for our tap room.
Yes.
And
we have a lot
likewise.
Of tasting room only because we know that we can control that keg every step of the way. We can baby it if it has cucumber.
Sure.
Cellulose in it. That's fine.
Sure. And avoid crazy things like, you know.
Exploding cans.
Because that should never be a thing.
Well, it's debatable, I guess.
Right. Yeah. But that's definitely a future episode.
Yes.
Talk about kind of current, I'd say like current beer styles, the demand from consumers, and how we as brewers meet that demand, but also help curate it and help lead the way in doing the right thing by beer, as well as ourselves and the consumers.
Yeah, yes, that's absolutely. Chris, you can't just ask. That was a whole episode right there. You can't just ask that question. Can we get back to asking the questions, please?
Okay, as long as it's within 8 minutes.
Yeah, man.
So we're running out of time. So we're just gonna bring it down to a couple of quick questions. But with all of your journey over 2.5 years, what is a bit of advice that you would give for anybody looking to open a brewery?
Give me one nugget.
A little nugget.
Nugget of advice.
Mm-hmm.
What you got? This is for both of you, so start thinking, Mary.
Don't lose faith in it. I mean, if you build it, they will come. And there's, in the sense that trust your gut. Like, don't Zen in the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, or Zen in the Art of Guitar Playing, is in Zen in the Art of Guitar Playing. There's an opening passage which is like, you know, you don't want to play like John Coltrane or just play John Coltrane because John Coltrane was popular. Play the music that you want to make. That's what John did. So, you know, and if you just make it, the people will. You're not the only one in the world that has a taste like you do. As long as you can get it out in front of people at a certain point, they will come to your music and taste it. And so that's, I think that make what you want to make. Make the beer you want to make and that you want to drink within certain amount of fiscal responsibility. Because, I mean, you have to keep that tap room open, like some for them, some for me. And so I think a lot of my training was at 508 Castro, where we only had 6 lines. So I considered them basically 3 for them, 3 for me, and for the room. And I think that I still follow that now.
That just got me right in the feels. Right in the feels.
And I'm gonna kind of counteract that.
What's your nugget, Mary?
So I agree with Chris, but I also think that one of the things about opening a brewery is you have to think about who you want to think about your customer, right? And I hate that word customer's vague, but you know, your people. Who are these people that are going to come?
Your guests.
Yes, your guests. And so take them in, you know, keep them in mind when you're considering, you know, everything from the design of your tasting room to the beers that you're going to brew to the staff that you hire to the names of the beer, the descriptions of the beer, like how are you going to make people feel welcome to come into your house with you and drink your beer?
I love that you just use that line because for those of you who haven't been to Fifth Hammer, one of the reasons why I do love it, and yeah, I'm biased. All right. That's true. But what you guys have made me see so much over the last year that you've been open is that like, tap rooms are very much an extension of the people who own it and run it. And I think that people might not ever interact with you that come into your tap room, which would be a shame, but I still feel like they get that sense of you guys, like your hospitality and your friendliness and your openness and your curiosity about your beers, like that emanates to people. And you get that sense when you go to other people's tap rooms, it is their home. And so maybe on that sense too, like not that I have any nuggets to give anybody, but like make it your own, make it your thing. It's going to be a reflection of you. And, yeah. And like you said, who you hire too, yeah. It's an extension of you. And you're right that you are inviting people into your home. So
listen, we spend more time there than at home. So it is our freaking home at this point.
And by doing that, you curate the kind of people. So you're going to thinking of the people first, but you can, if you make an extension of you, the right people will come to it. And yeah. Then you just continue with that.
Well, you want to be inclusive of everybody. You don't want to feel, you don't want to make a certain group or, you know, of people not feel welcome in your tap room. You want to be welcome to everybody, from the person who has never had a sip of craft beer or a sip of beer brewed in New York City, to the person that has clocked in 2,000, you know, check-ins on Untappd, to, you know, the person that just comes in with their sibling or their partner and normally drinks wine, but all of a sudden that purple beer that they see somebody drinking at the end of the bar looks pretty good. So you want to welcome everybody from all walks of life, no matter, you know, their background or their gender or their race or anything. You want to welcome everyone. And that is worth, I mean, you want to be, you're opening your house. Who do you want in your house? You want to be welcome to all.
And in our case, that direct to consumer interaction is our lifeblood.
Yeah.
Most definitely. Most definitely.
Yeah.
So, and happy for that.
Yep. Last minute, what are some events that you guys are having? Because you're not just a tap room and a brewery. You guys are also an event space. And you got some freestyle jazz going on all the time. You guys have the...
What's happening? So my big joke with Kuzma was that I don't think that he actually...
Pretty sure he just opened a space to play music.
Exactly. Yeah. The whole reason he opened a brewery and went through all that rigmarole and drug in Dave Sharfstein right was so that he had a built-in music venue.
I need a gig. Yeah.
So, and he does now. So every Wednesday, Chris
plays. It's great. It's a really great time. It's always a mix-up of different people playing different instruments. There might be somebody on drums or bass or piano or whatever, another guitar, another bass. But, you know, you'll find Kuzme on the saxophone or the bass.
Or both at the same time.
But it's always a great time Wednesday night. What else is happening? What other kind of weekly events? What's coming up at the brewery,
guys? So we do a monthly beer and cheese pairing with Andy Marcelli from Marcelli Formaggi.
That sounds fancy.
I think we've had him on the show before. We'll have to have him back because he's doing awesome stuff. I do a monthly beer and potato chip pairing. We do a monthly
Hammer Hall.
Hold on,
beer and potato chips,
like, made for each other, baby.
I don't want any Lay's potato chips. What kind of potato chips?
Lay's make some really great stuff.
That's true, especially if it's really Lay's from other countries like Taiwan or China, which we can get in New York City. Yeah, now, like, I will say, so I started this beer and potato chip pairing, I don't know, 3 or 4 months ago, and I've sought out, you know, unique potato chips. If you don't know, 7-Eleven does some amazing potato chips, like hot Italian sausage and prime rib. But we also have access to a lot of international groceries here in New York City. So we get international chips where we can get spicy Thai chili crab chips.
Awesome.
But the whole gamut. And now people bring me potato chips.
That's awesome. So I just got a
fresh delivery from Minnesota.
It's not just pairing with wavy versus not wavy. Okay.
No, we're talking about...
That makes more sense.
We're talking about blooming onion potato chips.
Ooh. Sounds good.
Yep. Tomato flavor, cucumber flavor. What else? Oh, man. I got a lot right now. I have boxes of potato chips.
Can you make a chip of the month club, and can I be in it?
Yes.
So where can we find these events?
Yes. On fifthhammerbrewing.com.
Fifthhammerbrewing.com.
We're getting better on the interwebs.
At Fifth Hammer Beer on Twitter and Instagram, though Twitter's very light. We lightly use that.
Tweet at Mary and shake it back to you.
It's fun. I think running a tasting room has been, great that we've met so many new people, and we're, like I said, we're welcoming people into our home. We're helping them celebrate things or, take a break from their life. And it's been a good place for us to explore some of our passions, like potato chip and beer pairing. I have a fiber group that meets once a month.
Fiber Faction.
Yes. So that's been pretty fun.
Our anniversary party on September 29th is going to be like kind of an amalgamation of all of them. We might have a chip buffet. We're definitely going to have a lot of music that night. Beers for ears kind of thing. This is a goal of mine. It's not set in motion yet, but I want this to happen. I would like to do beer church seminars on 11 a.m. at least once
Hallelujah.
A month.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
Yep. We're going to praise be the four deities of beer. Malt, water, yeast, and hops, baby. That's what I believe in. And love, five.
We have to wrap this up, but I am going to do a call out, actually.
Please.
Because, all right, we've been on intermittent and then finally hiatus as Femen about it over the last year because we were just too overwhelmed with running this brewery and Rachel with her life and her jobs.
A full-time job or something like that.
So we're sorry for that, but we're back and we are super excited.
We're reclaiming these mics.
There's a ton of amazing fermentation going on out there. We're excited to get back to some of these things like natto and
we got some new mead stuff coming up, guys. Yeah. Mead is happening here in New York and it's really exciting.
But we would also like to share some of your information. So we would love to get your recipes, tips and tricks, or anything along that line.
What are you making?
Yeah, exactly. So please send those to us. You can send them via Facebook or Instagram or
you can email us at fermentaboutit@gmail.com.
Yep. And we will definitely read a couple of those on every episode. We would love to share what you are doing, especially since we're so busy running the brewery that we haven't had as much time to ferment. We're trying to get back to that. We want your inspiration. We want you to share with our listeners what you're doing.
Yeah, that's right.
True that. Heather. You're an amazing host.
Aw,
thanks, Heather and Rachel. Well,
you guys, it's thanks, almost guys, like you've done this before. You guys were great guests.
Hey, all right.
You guys were great guests.
And thanks, Dave.
And Rachel, as usual, we love you. We're happy to be back.
So glad to be back. Something about it.
And Dave and Heritage Radio Network.
We should say our partner, Dave, but also our engineer, Dave.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Dave in the studio with those great anybody. Sound effects.
Yes. Hi.
Yes.
If you want to find Femen About It on the social medias, we are at Femen About It on Twitter. We also have an Instagram, I believe, also at Femen About It.
We're going to reboot all this stuff, too.
That's right.
Stay tuned for new
We got a Facebook page. You can find us.
You can like us to find our new logo, and also find us on heritageradionetwork.org.
I promise this is the most you'll hear us talk about ourselves all season.
Yes.
And probably for all the seasons going forward.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
See you later. Hear you later. Or what? Talk to you later?
Talk to you later.
Talk about it.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.